Across the country, folks are listening to A Nerd? Yep. Guiding you on your computer quest, here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
Tons of stuff for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. Steve Keske talks about the new TSA Clear and how it might not be right for everyone. Dr. Doreen Galley has the news and experience from the HR Tech Expo. Keith McTheodore and I are going to talk about what we would buy after last week's Apple event. And Marty talks about the work IQ Vice. I'm also going to cover how using AI for therapy has problems and tech needs to focus on solving these now. I'm going to ask, is my computer obsolete? And you might learn something from that one. On the IT Pro series, I'm going to cover quiet cracking. Ellie's going to ask me, why does my phone's touchscreen randomly stop responding? And on the scam series, I have a strange text that came to me to update my email with a company that doesn't exist. All of that, of course, on this week's Computer Talk Radio. You can download the podcast at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. You can also ask me your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be, right there at the website. Or you can phone me toll-free, 888-NERD. 888, that's 888-6373-888. Now let's go into the news from the last week, and it seems that we're getting closer to smart glasses that I'd be interested in. I wear glasses. I'm a nerd, and I wear nerdy glasses. Meta, via Mark Zuckerberg, well, they announced their new Meta Ray-Ban display glasses. These are going to be coming out at the end of the month. And yeah, they're nerdy. They're really, they are almost over the top. They've got that thick Ray-Ban look, but it's even thicker than before. But the tech is coming, and they finally have a pop-up display on one of the lenses. Of course, it has the ability to take videos, provide live captions to in-person discussions, and a number of other things. The downsides that I see so far is, well, okay, they've got a battery life at 6 hours. That's not thrilling to me. But the bigger issue is that Mark Zuckerberg's demo failed on stage with multiple missed video calls. And then there was also a remote demonstration on how to whip up a barbecue sauce, and that also failed. It seems like while we're nearing what I want, it's not quite ready yet. Even at $800 a pop, before you get into the accessories, prescription lenses, and all of the rest. Yeah, I'm already kind of leery, and it hasn't even hit the shelves. Now, another pricey item. So imagine this. You plunked down $1,800 to $3,500 on a smart fridge. You know, I'm not a fan of the idea of a smart fridge, but I would at least expect it to blend in. I want it to be useful. I want the screen to be just that nice look to it and use that for whatever I want. I would not expect it to start feeding me endless ads. Samsung has just released a new software update that does exactly that on a portion of the series of their family hub fridges. They say this is a pilot program. This is just months after they said they had no plans regarding doing exactly this. I barely understand the Amazon Kindle approach, where if you want the ad-supported version, you pay $30 less or whatever it is. This, however, is not what I think anyone bargained for when they bought a $3,500 fridge. The onslaught of advertising everywhere without our permissions. Okay, all right. So, yeah, it's probably buried in some end-user license agreement that we don't really get to read in advance. Or maybe we do, but it's so lengthy that, yeah, it's going to put you to sleep multiple times during the next month. At this point, I think this is going too far. I'm not sold on this idea at all, and I hope that we don't start to see other people coming up with the same ideas. Now, after some recent sad events drew attention to some of the ChatGPT handling of sensitive topics, I'm dancing around some of the news recently, but if you've been following it, you know what I'm talking about. OpenAI has announced a new effort. Their plans are to develop an age prediction system where, based on all of the things you're asking, they go, and how you're asking, they go, okay, you're over the age of 18. Maybe we'll go further in whatever direction you're going. Or maybe you're under 18, so we're going to resist sending you certain information. They are looking into age verification as well as an additional add-on to this. And the whole idea here is to restrict answers to what could be sensitive information. They do acknowledge that this is a big undertaking, and therefore it's not likely to be fully 100% successful. Yes, there is that idea of the age verification and where we'd have to provide our government ID, and that is a concern. But it does seem to be balanced with the limitation of information if we don't. I don't know. This I struggle in a number of different directions right now. And so let's get this straight. It is an early announcement and merely the beginning of the move in a new direction. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens over the course of the long haul. Now, before I dive into this next item, I will note I am a long-term customer of Verizon, and I am concerned. It appears that Verizon has some struggles ahead. Earlier this year, after reporting a loss of 51,000 prepaid customers, which this was something that was attributed to climbing prices for the service. But Verizon's response was that they were also going to raise the bar on customer service. And what does that mean? Well, it turns out that this actually meant that they were going to install AI for customer service lines. I'm already starting to get a leery, but apparently this has driven some higher dissatisfaction from customers with a variety of negative responses of getting lost in the mix. Ironically, this announcement was emailed to customers and it read, "You're not a customer number or a case file." All right, we're having AI answer this, and it's processing. Let's talk about AI. Yeah, that cold, heartless, unfeeling AI. We have robots answering the phones instead of real, live agents. How are you going to feel with this? I know that I really don't tie that to being anything but a customer number or case file. TikTok just got another extension here in the United States to find a workable deal. Of course, there come reports that there are advances towards some kind of new ground where they can meet in the middle, but the details aren't fully clear yet. I've mentioned this before. I've mentioned this a few times before. This is amidst an ongoing argument on a number of fronts between China's control of the app and all of the spying that they've been accused of and all of that. And this is also on the back of an announcement that China is accusing NVIDIA of violating anti-monopoly rules in China. Now, this situation is stalled. It's been complicated. It's been playing around with the expectations of people who want to see TikTok gone and others who love the platform so much that they never want to see it gone, both of them, for their own various reasons. So how this is all going to play out, we've got no idea. We're just going to have to sit back and watch and see. Now, we heard a double whammy of announcements this past week from Amazon. First up, they have a September announcement event coming on the 30th. And this is a recurring thing, and they usually announce new hardware right around this time. Now, it's too early to tell if that hardware will be ready right away. So how that impacts their second announcement is going to be interesting. Yes, they've got a new Prime Day coming October 7th and 8th. Yes, a day. Well, 2 days, but they call it Prime Day. Anyways, this could be a chance to get some good discounts on the outgoing hardware, but it could be a new hardware combined with deals on all of the other things surrounding it. So who knows? Either way, this is a common Amazon thing at this time of year, drumming up more sales before we get into the holidays, which include, yes, Amazon's Black Friday sales. We will be watching and waiting to see what they bring on the 30th. Coming up next, using AI for therapy does have problems, and we in tech need to be focusing on solving all of them now. That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Over the course of the last couple of months, I've been seeing a lot of different things going on where people have been using ChatGPT or various other forms of AI as therapists. And I really want us to all reflect on this. I really want us to think about this. I want you to imagine this late night moment. You're reaching out. You're touching base with ChatGPT. You're thinking of it as a companion, and you're feeling overwhelmed by things in school or work or life or whatever. And it responds with really smooth, well-formed sentences that sound caring. Sound interested in what you have to say. But something's missing here. Without a real human heart behind the words, the reply should actually sound robotic. And sometimes it's going to give advice that does far more harm than it does good. See, AI therapy works today mostly by matching patterns. It's training on a huge amount of text across the internet to figure out and guess what response fits best. It also tries to read into all of the things that you've told it about yourself and all of these different things going along. And look, it may come alongside of you. It's kind of designed to do that. And it can seem like it understands you, but it can't read your tone, your body language, your life experience. And it can't match any of the rest of that to what a real person can do. See, this is where it gets to be very tricky. When we have this cold, unfeeling code meeting someone who needs help, maybe even in a crisis, the lack of true care can lead in directions that we would never have imagined, directions that real live people would never take, including very harmful advice, words that should only come from trained professionals. Look, you need to understand, one big, huge issue here is there is a limited training of data collections that are going on. It is built from a variety of sources, and they can't understand, these sources can't relate the human mind like the human mind, real people can. So all of these sources and AI are just dry text. And AI systems, we know they read a lot of text, but they don't learn from real people, from experts that do this day in, day out, and have managed to work through a lot of issues with people, asking the right questions, avoiding the wrong answers and questions and all of this. That's why an AI will give very cold, careless advice, and it's going to miss some of the signs that someone's in trouble. They will not read the nuance. They will not understand what's going on here. These gaps will create a variety of different safety risks. I mean, we've already heard chatbots might suggest dangerous ideas, or they might miss chances to reach out for help when someone needs it most. There's no built-in way to spot serious danger, like hints of misguided actions or emotional breakdowns. It's like handling someone who's in crisis, but you're just a beginner. You have no training, no empathy, no real support, no experience, none of this to really offer. So we need to be thinking about this. I will tell you, if you are utilizing AI for therapy, it is not a great place to go. As a matter of fact, any kind of situation where you might be looking for a human interaction or that you should be looking for human interaction, AI is not the direction to go in. We need to be really careful about this. We need to be understanding that AI is great for building a whole bunch of text. AI is great for writing books and reports. It's not 100% perfect. As we know, there are a lot of different things. You can go out on the internet. You can see a lot of different news reports of how the news agencies have printed up stuff from AI, and only later when they realized, you know, things, huge mistakes, like Rhode Island is one of the largest states in the United States. Not necessarily that is an example, but that is the overarching idea of what I'm trying to say. It sometimes gets things really wrong. We need to be thinking about the idea of clear checkpoints that AI can report back to humans and say, hey, this could be a problem. And this should be built by developers and therapists working together to build up response systems that are tracking and follow real-world ethical rules. Yes, I think it would be great to set in automatic alerts that send high-risk chats to emergency services or live mental health professionals. I think that developers should be reviewing real chat logs, not just for language, but for emotion. And they need to be testing all of these different AI responses in different situations, mild worry, deep sadness, full-blown crisis, and improve these with help from people who are bona fide licensed counselors. Most of all, I think we need strong testing practices. That means updating all of the training data often, including voices from many cultures, to avoid one-size-fits-all mistakes, to really dig deep into all of the data and see if we're going in the right direction. Our path forward should be beyond just improving artificial intelligence. we need to be building multidisciplinary coalitions with the engineers, therapists, ethicists, and everyday users to make AI better. And we need to be doing this not just on this one front, but on all fronts. We need to be thinking about how we truly train AI to be better than it is, to be better for us in all of the different directions. Now, before you say government can step in and government should take charge here, I don't believe that. Companies should be taking responsibility for fixing problems. This should not be a situation where we see new rules and laws that might unintentionally slow progress. I think companies need to be acting now to fix any kind of ethical issue, any kind of output issues that are coming along that are really reflecting as AI being a bad performer here. Look, AI is still in its early days with everything, not just with the big focus I've had here with mental health support. We have a choice. We can help it grow with care and wisdom, or we can let it grow without guidance. If we build strong guardrails today, whether we're talking about emotional guardrails, ethical guardrails, or whatever it is, tomorrow's AI can truly help us not accidentally cause harm. No machine should be replacing a caring hand when someone's mind is in pain. Let's use what we know, what we care about, to build AI that treats people truly as they should. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. I always say this, if I don't answer, that's okay. Please leave a message. I will frequently answer, usually not during work hours, but I'm here to answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, and I really enjoy talking to listeners. So, again, 888-NERD-888. Keith M. Cedar joins me now. And last week, we talked about the Apple event, the fall iPhone Apple event. And it was more than just the iPhone 17 and all of its flavors, the EarPods and the
AirPods.
AirPods. Thank you. Yes.
EarPods were the former wired versions.
Okay. I don't have any of those. I
actually my AirPods Pro 2, Benjamin. They're fantastic.
I like the EarPods that came with my iPhone
6,
7, maybe. I don't know. Somewhere okay. Way back. I do have a couple of sets of those. I don't.
Yeah, the wired ones from back in the day are called EarPods. The wireless ones are called AirPods.
Okay. And the Apple Watch Ultra, the Apple Watch complete line was refreshed. So,
Ultra 3 is the one to have, though. I love the Apple Watch Ultra.
Okay. So, with what you have right now. So you've got a 15 Pro Max.
Pro Max with a terabyte of storage.
You've got which version of the AirPods?
Operating system?
AirPods do you have?
Oh, I have the AirPods Pro 2.
Okay. And your Apple Watch Ultra 2?
Correct.
Okay. Right now, where you're at.
And ironically, all of my Macs are much more vintage than that. All of my Apple mobile equipment is pretty much up to date.
Yeah.
Except for the operating system on my iPhone.
Okay. All right.
I'm still running iOS 17.
So of those items, you're ready to start thinking about Christmas. Mm-hmm. Which of those is getting the upgrade?
Well,
or are they all getting, or is there going to be multiples? Tell me.
Well, I'll put it this way, Benjamin. I was eagerly considering upgrading my AirPods Pro 2 to the AirPods Pro 3 until I made the discovery that the software on the AirPods Pro 2 will be upgradable to include the live translation feature if you upgrade your devices to iOS 26.
Okay.
And I'm keen to try that. And I don't really have any battery issues or any performance issues with my AirPods Pro. They hold a charge. And, you know, it's only when, you know, the non-replaceable batteries, you know, reach a point where they're not serviceable and they're not maintaining a charge, you want to consider replacing your device. But, you know, I am kind of in the same place I was when there was a rumored Apple television coming out. And I'm glad I didn't wait for that because, you know, that never materialized. Okay. Because the buzz, and again, we're not talking about what's rumored, you know, for next week or next month, but the buzz is that Apple will be coming out with a foldable iPhone by 2026 or 27, and
but you're not even going to go with that in the first iteration.
So that means I'm not considering upgrading my iPhone until at least the second year of a foldable iPhone, which could be as early as 2027 or as late as 2028 or whatever comes to fruition.
Okay.
It comes to fruition.
All right. But let's even back up. How long has the rumor been around that Apple was going to go in that direction? I'm going to say
at least a year, maybe a little longer.
Oh, longer than that.
I'm given comfort in the waiting because Apple has famously said, we don't need to be first to market. We just want to be best. Okay. And if they have to wait to develop it, I mean, because look, you remember that first round of Android foldables, you know, those screens were garbage.
See, I take a different tack to this.
Tell me.
I don't wait for the rumored item. I replace items when they die. Or close to dying. As a matter of fact, my iPhone 14 here is kind of getting long in the tooth. It's something that I'm still in the debate phase on it. There isn't a whole lot of exciting hardware improvement for me, as we mentioned last week. The AirPods. Or AirPods, rather, don't really thrill me at all.
Well, before you move off the phone, I'm very much in the same camp as you because, I mean, if you look at my track record, you know, I went from the 5 and then I went to the 6 because it was a, you know, good deal.
Sure, yeah, we covered
that
last week.
But then I didn't replace my phone until the 10S Max. And then didn't replace that again until the 15 Pro Max.
Yeah.
So I've gone. So, more than 5 years, more than once on replacing my iPhone. So I keep it till it's beyond long of the tooth.
And I think I'm sitting in that camp. The new Watch Ultra 3 does have this is the first one that really starts to nudge at me and says, hey, is there some allure there?
Benjamin, having owned several other Apple Watches, like regular Apple Watches, you know, the SE and the 6 and the, you know, Series 1 or Series 0, whatever it was, or in the earlier ones. The step up in quality, build, fit and finish, and just overall design of the Ultra line, whether it's the Ultra 2 or the Ultra 3, is an order of magnitude nicer. I mean, for a watch guy like you, I think you'd be jazzed by the Ultra 3.
So I get that. As far as the watch itself, it's just the idea of, okay, that watch is, you know, it's got a roughly 4-year lifespan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I compare it to my other watches. And do I really have the need? And that's kind
of... But you're made to be generational.
Yeah, exactly. So I have to think it over. But that's the only one that's really calling out to me from last week. Okay. Who knows? There's still yet a few more months to Christmas. But for right now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Cedor.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
Phone number 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, what do you have for us this week?
I did a fast detour into a language comment. You may have heard of Latin. It's an old language. A few people still speak it, almost as many as speak Minyan.
Mm-hmm. But or Esperanto.
Yeah. No. I don't know a lot of Latin, but I do know that the theme for Opposites Day is vice versa.
Okay.
The theme for this review, not quite the same, is versatile vice.
Okay. I like that. That's a good spin on it. All right.
All right. This is the IQ vice from Work IQ Tools. It's steel and cast aluminum, tough stuff. Think about every vice you've ever seen and then start thinking about these differences.
Mm-hmm.
The vice comes with two sets of jaws, essentially slip-on sleeves, each specialized for a different kind of holding.
Okay.
And Work IQ offers others in their accessory line.
Mm-hmm.
The base of the vice is a locking ball and socket so you can orient it in a ton of different directions.
Okay, all right.
It has a lever clamp that makes readjustments almost effortless. Now, like any voice, good. Like any vice, there are pinch points.
Okay.
But the documentation shows where to beware. Pay attention. You don't want to get pinched, and you can't have a vice without being able to pinch. So just look out for those pain points.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, no experience getting pinched by this for me. Uh-uh. I read the docs. Think about things that get easier when you can adjust the holding angle in all these different ways.
Sure, yeah.
Sharpening axes or mower blades.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, it's at your convenience. Drilling wood or metal. Doing pipe work. Bike maintenance. chainsaw repair, even just sharpening.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You get it. This is the Work IQ Vice system from Work IQ Tools of Plymouth, Minnesota. I like the sound of that, country of origin, don't you? It's mm-hmm, about 280 yeah. bucks on Amazon. And besides the extra jaw sleeves, it has optional accessories that you can attach to it that cost a little extra, like a magnifier, an LED work light, and a phone holder clamp.
I'm with you all the way up to the end. The phone holder clamp, because I'd be scared to, like, oh, hey, let's just put my phone in the clamp and then just crunch. But,
no, the clamp is not between the jaws. It comes off the base.
Oh, man.
I'm going to have to get Curly to put his head in the vice. The Work IQ, I've seen a lot of vices, a lot of clever stuff, a lot of basic stuff.
Yeah,
this one really struck me as, oh, cool. May not be time for Father's Day, but there's always the holidays.
Sure, definitely.
I also want to say, vice, any vice, is sometimes used for its ability to squeeze stuff.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Sometimes used for its ability to hold stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there are very few people who own vices, mm-hmm. who have vices on their workbenches, who tend to think about the best way to use them.
Yeah. So,
for example, how often have you seen a vice hold something that is otherwise flat in one end of the vice kind of pinched shut? You're putting a lot of stress on one point.
Yeah.
You're not letting the vice do what it likes to do.
Sure, yeah. I've always tried to avoid that. I've always tried to make sure that it's spread across, because I like that evenness. But then I'm kind of OCD like that. So
it's also, you know, also the vice is a basic tool. It doesn't have to stay basic. Mm-hmm. If you have, for example, something like a cylinder that mm-hmm. you want to put on there so you can cut it or drill it or polish it or do whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you thought about maybe wrapping it in a rubber sheet so mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. it doesn't walk out there looking like the dog chewed it?
Yes. Yes. I've done that because I made the mistake of the dog chewed piece. Like, oh, that looks ugly. What can I do to fix this? And perfect rubber mats. Wonderful.
Right. And with the Work IQ vice,
mm-hmm.
you start with your ability to adapt it, but think about its ability to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got a vertical piece and you've got your choice. You want to deal with it vertically, or you want to lay it down and do it horizontally. Mm-hmm, what's mm-hmm. the best way to measure it? Sometimes, I'll put a long piece in and mm-hmm. tape or clamp a measure to it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes pencil doesn't take on it. And this gives me the exact place where I'm going to do the drilling or the buffing or the milling or whatever I'm doing.
Sure. Yeah.
So what I like about the Work IQ vice is it doesn't restrict me from doing what I normally do to enhance vice work,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but it itself enhances vice works in the ways to make everything else more useful.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I'm going to definitely look into this one. This is a good idea. It sounds like a wonderful product.
Yeah. Put the squeeze on it.
Put the squeeze on it. Oh man, yeah, the puns we come up with, the dad jokes and all of it, absolutely wonderful. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell, that's Marty Winston, you are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I will be back with more in just a moment.
You know, puns are one of my vices.
Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround.
In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And I received a text message, and it goes like this. Hi, Benjamin. This is Holly from Resource One, an IT staffing firm. You sent us your resume a while back, and we tried emailing you at, and I won't give out the email address. It's a correct email address for what it should be. But it bounced. Please fill out this survey to update your email address. Thank you. And I started scratching my head. I don't understand why it's a survey. I don't understand why they would be texting me. And that in itself leads into a different direction. And yes, I did my research on it, and it turns out, yes, it's a scam. There are always going to be people that are trying to get you to click on things. They have some kind of level of urgency within their message. They're trying to tell you that there's something wrong or whatever, and it's up to you to fix this. And they ask for various details. In this case, this could be just a matter of this could be something that has a some kind of malware load behind it. It could be a survey that seeks to confirm whatever it is that they're trying to confirm, like the validity of my, I don't know where this link leads. I didn't click on it. I'm not going to. It could validate that my phone number is accurate. It could be something where they're looking to spam me. I don't know the next steps, but I did look this up. And I mentioned Resource One. Well, I looked it up. Apparently, there is a credit union that is called Resource One, and they've actually stated that this is probably a scam, that this is something that we should not be following through with this. And this is going to be a regular thing for all of us. Look, anytime you receive a message, anytime that you get just a little bit put off by whatever is going on, you need to be thinking about not clicking a link. You need to be thinking about not responding to whatever comes across. And this can be in a text message. This can be an email. This can be in a voicemail. I've got a voicemail that keeps coming in, and it keeps saying, call this number to be unsubscribed. Well, why would you even call me just to tell me how to unsubscribe? That in itself doesn't make any sense. Look, you can report scams like this. You can block them. If you get an iPhone, you just report a spam and you move on with your life. I don't know what it is over on the Android side. I don't have my Android tablets hooked up for that. The key thing here is think about blocking them. Think about avoiding any interaction with something that you're not expecting. Avoid taking any further steps that get you trapped into whatever ideas that they have going on their side. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
Your mouse is dead, and the computer is on life support. Benjamin Rockwell can help with that. Helping you gain the upper hand with your computer, here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. Of course, if you've got questions and you'd like to phone me, you can phone me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they all intertwine and affect us. Steve Keske joins me now. And Steve, what do you have for us this week?
How about Clear?
Clear?
Yeah.
Like the...
It's a new piece of software. Relatively new.
Okay, yes.
And what it does, it allows you, the individual, to pay a fee for 1 year to have facial recognition to different places.
Okay.
Such as airports.
You're talking the TSA Clear Plus, Clear whatever program?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, yeah.
It's a private company that wrote the software, and then they're selling it to whoever.
The TSA and airports, yeah, and stadiums, and but yeah, they're working in with things like LinkedIn and, yeah, and a few others. Okay, go on.
But anyway, it's the whole idea is they're using facial recognition to say, well, heck, I can see your face, and I've scanned it, and you're okay, so you can go through the line and not have to stand in line for ever and a day.
Okay, so I pulled it up here, and I'm looking at this. It's, yeah, $209 a year. Now, this is interesting because the last time I looked into this was a number of years ago, and it was, for me at the time, it was, do I just brave through the TSA lines, or do I go for the... go for the express option, the TSA pre-check concept. At least that's what they call it now.
Yeah.
And then there was an expanded version of that, which so it was like $90 for one level, and for another $20, it was, or maybe it was $30, like $120. You could get another level which applied to this was suitable to use as a passport adjacent kind of item,
yeah,
and it would work in a number of other places. And so now Clear, this is now actually separate. I remember Clear at that point in time was including it. So now we've got another hand out saying, reaching out to us, saying, we want more money. We want more money. Yeah. So I'll tell you the reason why I decided. I was doing a lot of travel back to California and to the city I now live in. Yeah. And going back and forth, but I figured out that it would take me probably about a half dozen flights each way, round trip flights, for it to actually make sense for me to do it. And I was just shy of that. I was doing probably about four round trips, and I said, "I'm not keen on this." And now with this dollar amount, I mean, we're looking at the TSA pre-check is another $80 on top of the $209, although they give a discount, I guess, for your first year of clear. Okay, go on. Anyways, that was my approach to it. How much traveling have you been doing lately?
Zero.
Okay. I had to ask. I didn't know if you flew anywhere. So, okay, go on.
But I mean, to me, I was looking at it and I'm saying, I would have to take a round trip ticket to somewhere, wherever.
Yeah.
And I would, for the $200 and some, I would say, I would have to do 10 or more.
Okay.
To make it even think that it would be logical to do.
Yeah, at this dollar amount, yeah, probably more like 10. You do save time in the lines, but you've got to, you know, the airports that I was traveling in and out of, I was when I was making that decision for myself, I realized, okay, the airports, you know, okay, I wasn't flying into LAX or LaGuardia or Atlanta, which I imagine they probably have a lot longer of a wait for you to go through TSA. I was going through some smaller airports. One of them both of the ones I flew into in Southern California were really easy. They had limited flights going in and out. So it didn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, it's the same thing with when I was flying out to see you. In California, got on the first flight, and I'm sitting there waiting for them to get the airplane to the, you know, up to the terminal. And that kind of stuff. But
yeah, I mean, people know that I lived in the Orange County area, John Wayne Airport out of Santa Ana, California. Yeah, I walked you actually up to the gate when you were flying back home. And that was our time in TSA. Actually, for you, because you were blind, they actually expedited you through the TSA. That was very nice of them.
And you know, that going through TSA, you know, going out to California, they said, I had my player for audiobooks, and they say, "What's this?" And I turned it over and I says, "It belongs to the federal government." Oh, okay.
Yeah. The books for the blind. Yeah. That is a big, huge unit that you had when you were flying then.
Yeah.
Not like the modern MP3 players, which are like nice and small. It was big. Yeah.
Well, because most of it's all in the battery.
Yeah.
Got it. But anyway, getting back to this whole idea of having facial recognition. They've tried facial recognition in different aspects of people coming in and going out of the country.
Sure.
And I've always had a big question mark.
Yes.
On that because of, you know, well, it's in the database. Well, you know, who's putting the stuff in the database?
Sure.
And how much is it costing to put it in the database or maintain that database?
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. And nobody could give me any clear answers.
No pun intended, of course, because we're talking about clear. You know, one of the things, too, that they really don't get into as far as, and I haven't checked, but I'm pretty sure it's a matter of you're still putting in some kind of a card, and it is verifying you, your face, or fingerprint or whatever against data on that card or in a database. It's not like you're just walking on up and it goes, "Hi, Benjamin," and it recognizes you just based on the shape of your face.
Yeah.
So, yeah. These days, I mean, the last time I flew was, I flew to California for a wedding last year, and I just handed over my passport, and they They glanced at it and ran it through the machine and sent me on my way. I was my entire TSA pre-check or check-in or whatever was both ways, probably 5 minutes max.
Mm-hmm.
I spent more time going through the X-ray machines and taking off my shoes and putting them back on than the rest of the headaches that were involved there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I did the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, I'm sure there are people that it is going to apply well to. I'm sure that there are people who, I know a couple, they both live in one area and they both fly out for the week to their respective jobs and fly back on the weekends. And so they're putting in, you know, a matter of 50 round trips a year, maybe 40 round trips and whatnot. But yeah, that would make sense for them.
Oh, yeah, it would. And it would probably save them a lot of time in the airport.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Is it cost effective for the average traveler?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
If you're doing a couple of flights a year, definitely not. This is something everybody should be doing. They should be processing every different purchase that they make and say, is this cost effective? And a lot of people don't really think that through.
No.
Yeah. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I will be back with far more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Of course, scroll down to where it says contact us today. I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Dr. Doreen Galley joins me now. And Doreen, you were at, HR Tech, is that the name of it?
Yes, HR Tech at Mandalay Bay here in fabulous Las Vegas.
All right, so a lot of stuff having to do with how we are, how companies are going to leverage technology in the human resources world. What's the first thing that came to you as you were going through this? What was the most interesting one?
Yeah, it was. I didn't know what to expect. I hadn't been to the HR Tech conference before.
Okay.
On the first day on site was Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
and when I was looking for the media room, I happened to run into a PR agent.
Yes.
Who said, "Yes, please come to our talk," and got everyone on the panel to sign it. So that's the one session I got, and it was on paying your employees with cryptocurrency. Stable coins.
Okay. So, that's good.
Stable coins. So coins tied to the U.S. dollar. But in 2025, there's a lot of employees that would prefer to be paid in cryptocurrency instead of dollars.
Okay.
But there was other benefits and things that had mentioned too, right? So in the banking systems, there's a lot of inherent friction, because the banks make a lot of money by causing that friction. Mm-hmm. You know, when they don't give you credit for your money for 3 days, they're getting interest on it. Those hold 3 days in the middle. Yeah. And they charge you for ACH payments. But there's a whole nother rail system they can use to move money that doesn't cost money, but they refuse to use it. But cryptocurrency, there's free systems and direct systems where you can move money and move it around. And so companies can also save a lot of money by using these type of financial systems and services as opposed to the traditional banking methods.
So now how does that work? I mean, do you get a pay stub and then there's like a QR code or something on it and you scan the QR code and that loads the money into your wallet or what?
That's a great question, but no, they actually have a way, just like the regular banking system, there's back-end systems and it shows up in your cryptocurrency, except there's a lot less friction and a lot less delay, so it shows up basically immediately.
And as a stable coin, that means that it's not going to go up other than how the dollar goes up or go down like some of these various cryptocurrencies which have just disappeared. So.
Yeah, it's not speculative. Stable coins are not speculative. Right, they're literally one-to-one translations. In addition, particularly for frontline workers or ones that are more financially tight in terms of putting all the pieces together, evidently, cryptocurrency stable dollar bank accounts are paying 4 to 5% interest.
Okay. That's
right?
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
you have to put in a good chunk of money into a CD to get that kind of return. So that's nice.
Exactly. And so they're like, these financial tools are opening more opportunities for our employees. And there was a lot of tech too. There was tech there for financial management in general for employees and managing incentives and benefits. But I thought some of the more interesting technology came on the finding talent and recruiting side.
Okay. All right. Do tell.
And admittedly, there was some things I was tempted to dig in and hit some of them up too hard, but it didn't. But there was some like, we had run into Fountain on more than one occasion, but they have like a frontline operating system to make it easy for frontline workers to do all things, those sorts of things. So that was interesting. But the, there was one, it was a gem was to find the hidden gems, and it's a passive recruiting tool. So to how to find all those people that aren't actually looking for jobs, which you and I both know, that's probably right where you find your better employees. And then there was also one, it was Fit First, and it was kind of like looking how people match to jobs, but not based on the traditional ways they do it. Like the skills matrices, the skills they list, I always personally find them weird. Mm-hmm. Like I can drive a car. Do you care and ask me on the resume if it's a Ford or GM? Then why are you asking an actual expert between one cloud or the other? Because at certain levels of expertise, the exact tool you're using as ridiculous as saying, well, I can drive a GM, but not a Ford, or I can only drive Toyota.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So many different platforms are so similar. It doesn't matter whether you're using A, B, or C. You're absolutely right.
Right. And entry people who maybe don't have a thorough understanding of the industry and the technology, maybe when they're just using a tool and they only know one language, that could be sensitive to the exact brand of the interface.
Sure.
But when someone is truly a computer scientist, as an example, and they've used a lot of databases, you know, the benefit, maybe if they didn't use your exact one, could actually be larger than if they used your exact one.
Sure.
Because they know how systems work and the different things and the, you know, it's the diversity of perspective. But it's not like there's any startup type to go from one to the other.
Right.
Or one of my favorites was, you might remember a few years back. Do you remember when they were screaming, there are no data scientists?
Yes, yes.
And I was at the big firm at that time, and it drove me crazy because from a functionality perspective, working with numbers to do specific mathematical modeling and analysis, a weatherman is a data scientist.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
have you ever noticed they talk about their models?
Yes.
What models do you think they're talking about? Those are machine learning models.
They're not putting toothpicks in popsicle sticks together? No.
No, you're not creating a model car. No. The models. And so the funny thing is in everyday life, people have been hearing AI terms but didn't realize it. Mm-hmm. An economist is a data scientist.
Yes.
They just specialize in data science over money and people.
Yes, right? Yes,
an
very
actuarian,
true.
An actuarian is a data scientist, right? Mm-hmm. They just specialize in data. And so part of the fit first, I think that was the one, and there's another one that was similar. It's kind of like behaviorally, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, functionally, what is the job as opposed to checkbox skills? Because the checkbox skills will miss things and we'll make ridiculous assumptions. And then you give these checkbox skills tools to people in HR trying to hire engineers who don't understand that, of course, if you know A, you know all the things required to do the job A, right? You know, if you're an architect, yes, you've probably designed a solution, right? I mean, how do you architect without designing a solution, right?
Exactly.
Or creating a roadmap for it.
Yes.
You know, there's just some things that are assumed that many of the systems that HR are using are, every engineer knows, they're ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, we laugh at all of them.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of exciting and interesting to see how they were trying to use AI to make it better.
Mm-hmm,
There was also a group of AI or tools that were adamant about trying to make sure that people are kept in the process.
Mm-hmm. Good. And that is something definitely good to be seen. I'm going to throw one more question at you. And that is, what was the craziest, most off the wall thing that you saw there that you realized that's never going to work in real life?
Oh, wow. There's a lot of them. Not necessarily one.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, The fundamental thing when you're using AI to sort through talent is interesting because it has to be a multi-level solution because you first have to decide if someone is qualified, right? And then when someone's qualified, what you really should do is what most people don't know how to do with AI is you actually have to find the exception. You don't need the AI to pick out the commodity that's like everybody else. If you really want the great talent, because, you know, I mean, if you want the commodity employee, that's fantastic. But you actually want to do the opposite. So it should be interesting.
Very cool. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell, and she's from TBWAdvisors.com. I'll be back with more Computer Talk Radio in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
A regular question that everybody should be asking themselves is my computer obsolete? And this is something we should be asking ourselves on a regular basis. In any economy, of course, it becomes a relative question as we also seek to save here and there. Computers do work for a long time. I've got a computer that sits up on the shelf It's kind of a showpiece. It was probably came out in 84, I think. And it'll power up. And it technically works, but it isn't practical. You know, you really couldn't do much work on anything like this other than basic typing and maybe some basic spreadsheets if you want to use like one of these old screens. And this is something that is clearly obsolete. Computers are similar to cars, and people sometimes just want to have the old timer cars around. That's what I've got to that up there, the TRS-80 Model 100. And some people switch cars every few years just so that they get the new gadgets and the new trends, etc. And it's really the same with computers, but on what is a faster scale. You know, a new baby in the home might prompt a change from a sports car to a minivan or a sedan. A new graphics-intensive program could prompt a switch from a slow computer that handles Word and Outlook really well and can surf the internet, but it doesn't do well with gaming or video editing or whatever it is you need that really pushes the envelope of what computers, your current computer can do. And, you know, there are people who will stick with their old car until it shows signs of wear and tear. And even today, we've got a lot of people who are still on Windows 10. And there is a mantra one of my pastors used to really push, use it until you can't. And there are a lot of people who use this, noting that the computer still works. You know, it's the old email programs will run. The internet is accessible, but it's slow and difficult. And okay, sometimes I can't view websites as well. But you know, everything else, word processing and spreadsheeting, that all still works. Look, on a personal level, if you've got no need for a high-performance computer, you don't need to bother with the expensive stuff. You just need to get what you need. There's more to this. So I want you to think this through. I want you to hang tight through this. Businesses, they have different needs. Efficiency is a concern. Uptime is greater. In the business place, an old computer dying in the wrong place could leave a company in jeopardy. Common computers through a company does allow for reduction in downtime and easier repair costs through common problems in the machines for techs to deal with. But there are different things along the way where you've got to start reflecting if a new computer is going to help. No matter how we look at this, the cost is also going to be important. Computers don't resell very well, and you have to balance this carefully. Cheaper computers purchased more often to keep budget down, or expensive ones less often to keep computing power now, but then be a little bit behind later. I'm sitting here, and I've got a system down. It sits right next to my knee. It's up, elevated up just a little bit off of the carpet, but it's probably still a little too close. But I'm looking at this, and it's actually lasted me a lot longer because I spent a little bit more money back then. And it's flat out old. And I've noticed it's slowing down. The hardware is just not as snappy as what I would expect. And my work system actually is a laptop, and it'll run rings around my old desktop that's sitting down there. So I've been looking, and right now, at 5 years old, it's time to replace it. I've noticed that there's new software out there that I want to run. There's yes, I've upgraded to Windows 11. I did that earlier this year on this final machine. This is my primary machine, but I resisted for a long time, and that's kind of contributed to this. So we do need to think about the overall desktop and laptop computer usage life whenever we're starting to think about this. Frugal users might last out 5 years. And maybe longer. You can go to 7 years if you get something a little bit more high-end when you're first purchasing. Typical users, 3 to 4 years. Power users, maybe 3 years. And laptops, I used to say half of that lifetime, but these days we're getting a little bit more. But we've got to really think about this. There is no firm time to replace your computer. I want you to think about replacing it when you feel that it's no longer doing what you need it to do. Sooner or later, however, your time spent waiting for the computer just spread over the course of a year is far more expensive than any of the money that you might spend on a new computer. One of the things I really think about is that money evaluation. And this has worked for me in business. This has worked for me personally. And it is a great way to approach this. I want you to think about this as 5 minutes a day, 365 days a year. That is 30 hours of time lost. Even if it's just that, 5 minutes a day, 365 days a year. How much do you get paid? $10 an hour? That's $300 of your time lost to the wind. $20 an hour? That's $600 of your time just gone. And what of more? As we start to think about this, this is where we need to start applying the idea of at what point in time do we just say, yeah, it's more cost effective for me to upgrade, for me to get a newer system. And this applies, in, as I said, in business, in personal usage. And yes, you do need to factor in some of your time for moving over to the new system. You need to factor in some of the different things you're going to struggle with over the course of the next week or so after you get that new system. I will tell you, though, it's worth it every single time, as long as you're plotting it out correctly. You buy one every 3 months, it's not going to work out well. But after 5 years, yeah, this old guy down here, he's headed for the dustbin. Because, yeah, as good as I got it back then, it's no longer there. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and some of the things that are going on. And there's been a term around for a little while. We've heard of quiet quitting and things like that. There is something called quiet cracking, and this is the new term. And this is somewhat similar to things like job burnout and just overall exhaustion. And we've seen this in the past in various roles people have worked in. And they're assigning this new hip term to it. Quiet cracking. I want you to imagine you arrive at your desk and you've got various unspoken frustrations that are chipping away at your job satisfaction, whatever motivation that you've got going on that, or you should have going on. And this is being used to describe that hidden stress where you've got to meet all of these visible targets, but you're struggling somewhere underneath the surface, mentally and emotionally. And this isn't like sudden burnout. This is something that builds up over time as your various tensions go unresolved and your performance, it just kind of slips away. There's no obvious warning signs. And it does eat into people. I hear that a lot of people talking about they have this erosion of their focus or creativity or just otherwise overall engagement with work. And we can recognize the signs both in ourselves and others where maybe there's just this persistent fatigue. And it happens all week long, or maybe a hyper focus on really minor details as employees, whether it's you or someone around you, they refine trivial tasks in order to avoid more challenging responsibilities. This isn't just a matter of laziness. This is laziness that occurs where you had a star performer before. There may be some level of withdrawal from team conversations, reluctance to collaborate, things like that. And it could be a matter of there's stress that the people sometimes overlook. And there may be mood changes that come along with this, irritability, sudden sensitivity, things like that. And we need to be addressing this, whether it is a matter of us or our peers or people who report to us, whatever it is. And there are a number of different underlying causes that can be attributed to this. I want you to think about our role definitions just vague. Are there priorities that are shifting, which leave uncertainty where employees aren't sure about what the expectations are, success measures? Maybe there's limited pathways for advancement, maybe it's a feeling of undervaluation by some people. And all of these different things feed into disengagement. And there's a lot of different potential causes. I'm going to tell you right now, one of the big things to do is there need to be boundaries set. The defining of realistic work hours and daily goals. You can do this yourself if you're experiencing this. You need to make sure you're meeting commitments, your goals, all of your work, and you need to be watching that you have the energy to do that. And along with this, incorporate breaks into your routine. Go through and step outside. Reset your focus a little bit more often, especially for remote workers. I'll tell you, I mean, one of the things that this is an area where I need to actually focus on, because I do sit at my desk for long periods of time throughout the day. Now, I do try to take breaks other than just going to the restroom. I try to do something more to be active and so forth. And that I feel helps me quite a bit. But I do think I need to do it more often. Also, you should have regular check-ins with your coworkers, with your mentors. And these should be a matter of gaining perspective to share challenges and diffuse any mounting stress. But this is also something where you can do these as we would with the regular coffee breaks, where you go and you go to the coffee room and you talk with somebody. I'll tell you, being remote does take some additional work so that you are connecting with people, meeting them, and also meeting your own needs for communication, for fellowship, and so forth. You've got to pursue those various opportunities to really meet up with people. You should also be looking for ways to build your skills. You should be looking to be moving forward and preventing stagnation with your tech skills, your people skills, your work skills, whatever they are. You've got to really communicate well. If you're experiencing this, if you think somebody's experiencing this, try to build connections, reinforce the idea of people belonging, and really work to counter any kind of isolation. And as needed, take mental health days or encourage people to take the same. And these may actually prevent small cracks from being irreparable fractures. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell, and you're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Ellie had a question for me. Why does my phone's touchscreen randomly stop responding? Look, I get this. You know, it's trying to, you know, deal with this as if you're wearing gloves or something like that. And that actually is one of the things during the winter seasons. You've got to make sure you've got gloves that have the proper capacitive touch little felt on them. But there's a lot of different things. If you've got dirt or oil on the screen, that or on your fingers, even your own oil on your hands can do this. But here's something else too. I discovered this a long time ago after I freshly cleaned my glass. Sometimes it would happen that the touchscreen would stop responding in some areas until the moisture dried up. I mean, we think of this as glass, but it's actually touch capacitive screens. So it is going to respond based off of a few different things. And this is a very big area. We run across this, whether we're dealing with the screen itself or if you've got a screen protector that's on top of it. And those screen protectors can actually impact sensitivity. If you're getting the cheap ones, get the more expensive ones. I like Zag. So does Keith. He's very fond of those. And that's something to really be thinking about. Of course, you can check into, and this is something that if you're on the Android side, you might have some rogue apps. You might have some memory overload that's freezing up the interface. And that part can happen on either side. And yes, also heat buildup. That's another item that can really change how the phone is responding. And then lastly, the idea of hardware damage. If you've dropped your phone too many times, there could be a situation where a frame being bent can affect the touch sensors. I had that on an old iPad. And also, kind of in that same vein, you know, we go on out, and this is an industry that was big a few years back. It's kind of disappeared as far as I know. But the idea of replacing the screen when you crack it. So you go on out, you get a replacement screen at one of these kiosks in a mall way back when. I remember my wife got one. And the screen replacement that she got, the hardware, was inferior. So for a short while, 6 months or so, she had little bits of issues plaguing her whenever she would use the screen. So that's why utilizing the actual OEM, original equipment manufacturer, screens is so important. We take a lot of this tech for granted. And we think that, oh yeah, it's just like, you know, replacing it with something else that's very similar. No, you really want the original equipment. Number of different things can happen there, but you've got an idea. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.